Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. Today's host, Chris Kington Barker, and her guest from the Rose Care Group will discuss efforts to fill gaps in health services here in San Luis Obispo County. We invite you to listen, learn, and participate in our conversation today between 1 and 2. And we're live in the studio today, so if you've got questions, please do call in and be part of the discussion. Our number is 805-781-3875. And with that, let's join Chris and her guest. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Nice to see you.
Thank you, Brad. You too. Alan Iftanook.
Iftanook is good.
Is it Nook?
Good job, Chris, yeah.
Okay. Chief Executive Officer for Rose Care Group, otherwise known as RCG, is joining me today. And if the name sounds familiar, you probably have heard of Alan because he is retired as the president and CEO of Dignity Health, French Hospital Medical Center. And how many years were you there, Alan?
22 years at
Holy
French.
Moly.
22 years with French, yeah, here in this community, right?
Jeez, I remember when your welcome party was.
Why, Chris, me too.
Whoa,
that was a while ago.
Well, you're here now because you got, as you said, pulled out of retirement, kind of convinced to come out of, compelled to come out of retirement. We're going to talk about the reason that you got pulled out of retirement, and I'm going to start with that.
Okay.
What was it that brought you back?
Well, Chris, you know, in all honesty, after over 50 years, most of that was in healthcare. At the end of the pandemic, I was tired, and I was in my 70s, and I had promised myself and my wife a couple of years prior to that that I would retire and spend more time with her and my kids and grandkids. And at the end of the pandemic, I was ready to do that. And we spent the last couple of years traveling and having fun with our family and our friends and her and I getting reacquainted with one another. And I was enjoying the heck out of my retirement. A good friend of mine by the name of Arpad Su, who is the founder and the principal owner of RCG, had been a friend for some time through mutual acquaintances. He had been a donor to French Hospital in the past, and we had become friends. And over the last several months or so, I would meet with him and his son, Zoli, to talk about their vision for providing a continuum of care for seniors in our community, especially in light of what was going on with Wilshire. So over several months, we talked about ideas, we talked about vision, and ultimately one night at dinner, they said, well, we need a leader, and would you consider being our leader and come on board as the CEO? After a lot of discernment, I really, really focused on what that vision was and what it could mean to our community and decided that it was the right thing for me to do. So I came back in, eyes wide open, an awful lot of excitement again, and excited to see what we can do going forward to help our community. So,
and when you talk about Wilshire, you're talking about Wilshire Health Services,
yes,
and Community Services.
Yes.
And you mentioned the continuum of care. Can you talk about what a continuum of care is for someone that really has heard that word but really doesn't understand what that is?
Yeah, it can be a confusing word, but in this particular regard, what we're talking about is taking seniors from the point where during their journey of life, where they go from independent living to maybe assisted living, skilled care living, and then ultimately sort of the last chapter of their journey, and that might be hospice. So the way it works typically here in our community, as well as most communities around the country, is at those various stages, there's various intersections with various providers of those services. And you have to go through that transition as you go through that transition. And that can be very, very difficult, and in fact, painful, and maybe even dangerous at certain points. So just like in health healthcare in the hospital, we like a continuum. So we want the handoffs to be with the same people that are intimately involved with knowing that person, knowing what their needs are, knowing what their desires are and their expectations, being able to deal with them and their family on one continual basis. So the continuum is really going from independent living all the way through that last chapter of their life.
Now, when Wilshire closed its doors, it had a lot of different services that it was providing. It was kind of divided in half, mm-hmm. well, three parts. So there was the community services part. Mm-hmm. There was that part of the Wilshire that was doing outreach and doing services to all seniors in the community in their own home. Is that something that you envision as being part of a continuum of care for RCG?
That's where we would like to go. So the question is, you know, how did an organization, RCG, that was initially in the assisted living business provides? We have 15 assisted living facilities up and down the county. And what we found was that our patients, as they got older and their journey was going on, they had various needs. They would have health care needs or other needs, other assisted needs. And we would go to outside agencies because we weren't prepared to provide those services and bring them in. And more often than not, it raised the cost of those services or care to that patient. And also, there was an incongruity in terms of how that care was actually transitioned. So transitioning care from one organization to another can be very, very difficult. So we decided it would be best if we did those things ourselves. So we started Avon Home Care, so we're able to provide those services in-house to our residents. And then more recently, we were granted a license by the state to create a hospice, which is interesting. It shows the need. There's been a moratorium in the state of California on issuing hospice licenses, Chris, as you know, for the last 4 or 5 years,
right.
I think. So we were the first to actually get one. Over that period of time, because the need was clear what we needed to do here in SLO County.
Now, the patients that were on service with Wilshire Services went to Dignity and went to Central Coast Hospice.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes.
Have any of those, is your hospice open yet?
So we've received our license from the state. As you know, there's a process that we have
right.
to go through. So the state has granted us our license, and there is a maximum number of patients that they require us to take.
Right.
Sort of proof of,
service.
You
can do it.
Right?
Yeah.
And you do that pro bono, which is fine. And then after that period of time, the federal government comes in and grants the Medicare license. So all of that is prescribed, and we are in that process as we speak.
Are you providing those hospice services to community or just to patients that are residing in the care homes that you have?
Today, just in the care home that we have.
Okay.
But we're already talking with partners out in the community, healthcare partners out in the community, how we can help take on their patients as we're able to do that. So as all of our licenses are finally granted and our staff is fully trained and so on and so forth, we're looking to expand probably pretty dramatically and be an assistance to help fill what Wilshire is no longer able to do. So.
And your home health service has been around since 2017?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And has it only been servicing the care homes?
At this point, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Again, there was a need within the care homes to do that.
Right.
But now we're looking to expand that out even further. Yes.
With what do you see? You know, you've been involved in this care community, even though you were dilly-dallying in Europe and whatever you were doing for a period of time. But what do you see for the seniors in this community are some of the pockets of services that are underserved? And how do you envision that RCG is going to be a major player in that or make a difference in those areas?
Chris, I think, you know, our demographic, as we know nationally and certainly locally here, is aging. And to find skilled providers is always a challenge. So the need just always seems to be greater than what can be met by mm-hmm. the existing, you know, players or providers in the community. So we know that there is a good need in terms of home care services, primary care services, ultimately hospice services, and even senior living, ability, assisted living rooms and so beds and so forth. So we're the first organization in our community that will have all of those components to be able to offer as needed. And our goal is not to compete with our healthcare partners. It's really to figure out how do we partner and collaborate in the best interest of our patients and of our community. And that's, I guess, the primary reason why I came back was to have an ability to have that kind of an impact to help the community that I love and chose to stay and retire in. So pretty important for me.
You mentioned the care homes that you have. You've got 9 of them?
15.
15.
Yeah.
And they're in, I know you have a number of them in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, from Paso all the way down to Napomo, and we're currently working on one in Santa Barbara County, close to Marion.
Okay.
So
okay.
That one is still under construction.
Okay, and these are homes that would be residential that would have different levels of care for individuals.
Yeah, they're not skilled nursing facilities.
Right.
They're assisted facilities, right? So
as
somebody ages, because the population, when they come into one of these facilities, is typically older, and their health changes can change very rapidly, we now have the services to be able to provide so that they can stay in-house and within our organization and be supported.
How do you envision that people who want to live in their own homes might be served by RCG?
Yeah, that's the goal, is to be able to expand our services and be able to provide that to those folks in their home. I spent early in my career a fair amount of time in the home healthcare industry, and being able to take care of folks in their home is what a lot of people choose to do, right. And we want to be able to provide that as an option to them as well.
Now, you were running Dignity French Hospital Medical Center when there was a lot of movement toward physician practices, mm-hmm. and building that and developing other things that were a continuum of care there.
Right.
Do you see that you would be aligning with some of that?
Yes.
As a way of expanding the services? Because what I keep hearing in the community is people feel like they can't get access,
yeah.
to finding a physician if they're— a lot of them are now with physicians that are retiring.
Right. Yep.
And how do I find a new physician that I can trust? How do I find one who's going to take Medicare? How do I find a specialist? Do you know what I'm saying here?
I know exactly what you're saying. So we have a concierge medical practice as part of an organization within our family of organizations called WellBridge. And they provide concierge medical care exclusively to seniors. And the idea is to grow that along with our other services, to offer it to not just the residents of our facilities, but to the greater population. And I'm spending a fair amount of time talking to my physician friends out in the community, as well as my hospital friends, and saying, look, we know where the needs are. We know how difficult it is to get these healthcare providers. We can help. We can't solve the problem, but maybe together we can make a bigger dent into it, and that's our goal.
Okay. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your listener-supported radio station. My guest today is Alan Iftinick, Chief Executive Officer for Rose Care Group, Inc., RCG. You can visit their website at rosecaregroup.com. If you have questions about our topic today, call us at 805-781-3875 and join the conversation. And you were talking about the concierge services.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about what that means, because concierge sounds to me like it is exclusive. So what is a concierge service, and how does that differ from going to a physician's office? How is the billing for that?
Great question. So concierge, as we know it traditionally, is a pay-for-service, right? So,
right.
So if you have a concierge physician, you pay some monthly or annual fee to have more access to that particular physician. And more physicians, certainly in our community and around the country, are choosing that as a way to supplement change the model of their practice. So it's very common. In our particular case, we're offering a concierge service, which is exclusive, but there's no charge at this point to our residents. It's a service that we are providing because we're able to do it, and the way that the physicians and the caregivers are paid is strictly by what we're able to get from Medicare billing. So the patients don't pay a concierge fee in this case. It is exclusive, but there's no fee charged to them.
And those are for residents in the—
At this point, it's our residents, yes.
Okay. So if you open that up to individuals on the outside, would that exist for them, or there would be a concierge fee?
You know, we have to look at that model, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very difficult to provide anything for free, as we know. Somebody has to pay for it. So we would have to look at that model as we expand, as we grow. What are the possibilities for
us? Alan, since we're talking about this, and you've got a lot of experience in this area in physician practice, can you talk for a minute about the reimbursement for Medicare here in this county and why it is so challenging for physicians in the community?
Yeah.
And why many of them have gone to concierge?
That's a good question and a complex question. We have to go actually way back into the 70s when Congress was deciding how to allocate funds for the Medicare program. And even back then, there was a lot of lobbying by the bigger cities saying, look, we have more residents, we have more responsibility, we need a bigger piece of what that pie is, so our fee structure ought to be commensurate with whatever the cost of living in San Francisco or L.A. or Chicago or New York is. Made perfectly good sense back then. But as time goes on, people move and the demographics change and the population changes. And in this particular case, Slo County at that time was very, very rural.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was designated a rural provider of Medicare services and given a much lower rate than the bigger cities. Again, over time, people discovered the Central Coast, discovered San Luis Obispo, and moved. Unfortunately, the fee structure hasn't changed because the pie is still set. So, and we've argued this a lot over the years to our legislative folks, we need to rethink how that pie is allocated. The answer typically seemed to be, well, you've got to convince your friends in the bigger cities that they should take a little less so that you can get a little bit more because there is no more big part of the pie. Well, that's been very difficult to do. On a sort of a maybe hopeful note, Congress is now looking at that and saying there has been enough change over the years in terms of population, age, and movement, and we ought to relook at how those fees are allocated. So I'm hopeful, we're all hopeful, that maybe we'll get some new consideration. But to your point, Medicare is primarily how a lot of physicians earn their living.
Yeah.
And if you're making a smaller fee here at a place where it's pretty expensive to live, as we know, versus going to a place where you can get a larger fee and maybe not cost as much, it just becomes more desirable on a personal basis. So when I was at French Hospital as the CEO, we had no trouble recruiting young physicians to come and take a look at the Central Coast, and they would all fall in love with it.
Of course.
Ever said, I hate it here, I don't want to be here.
I would never live here, yeah.
But then they would look at the cost of housing.
Mm-hmm.
And they would look at the fees that they're going to get from Medicare, which we don't control, right? That is assigned. It is what it is. And then they would say, I just can't afford to feed my family and provide the lifestyle that I want to do for them. And so we would lose or not be able to attract the kinds of caregiver sometimes that we wanted.
No, I appreciate.
So there's a shortage.
Yeah, I appreciate you explaining that, because when people say, well, my physician doesn't take Medicare assignment means that they accept what Medicare pays.
Exactly.
And doesn't charge the difference to the patient,
which they can't, right?
Which they can't.
They cannot do that, right?
Yes. And now people are looking at concierge services, which adds a benefit.
So that physician will take whatever that assignment is,
right?
But it's supplemented out of the pocket of the individual,
right,
for the exclusive right of being
not
a part
fully
of that
supplemented, however.
No,
not even close.
Yeah.
And to explain the services that we didn't have open heart surgery, we didn't have neurosurgery, we didn't have the kinds of NICUs that exist here. We didn't have any of that when the assignment of the payment scale was made.
Yeah. In fact, you bring up an interesting point. I've marveled over the time that I've been here, and I want this not to sound in any way arrogant. In a way, it's kind of surprising to me that the quality of care that we actually do have here.
Yes.
And the reason for that is this is such a beautiful place to be. Mm-hmm. And there are so many incredibly gifted physicians, nurses, pharmacists, therapists, rad techs, whatever, that have decided that healthcare is their true vocation, is something mm-hmm. that they have a real passion for, and that lifestyle is equally important to them as pay.
Right.
And so we're able to attract some incredibly gifted caregivers in this community that even to this day sometimes surprises me. And I've seen the CVs of tons and tons of these folks, and you go, wow, these gals could go anywhere they wanted to,
right,
but they've ended up here, much mm-hmm. like you did and me.
So. Yes, exactly. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that are missing now that Wilshire is absent, and I don't know how they'll be replaced in the community. Some may be replaced in October when grants come up for grab,
mm-hmm.
And those are things like, for some of the elder, things like home-delivered meals or things like companionship.
Transportation
was huge, especially for North and South counties. Although services now are being more available in those counties, there's still transportation for people's homes.
Yep.
Housekeeping chores and assistance with just being a companion. Do you envision that as a collaboration in the community, that the different entities that exist now, whether it's Adventist, Dignity, and RCG, that those are going to get together to try and work on recreating? Do you envision that some other nonprofits are going to have to resurface in order to do that?
You know, I've been very fortunate in that through the course of my career here, I've gotten to know so many wonderful, compassionate people that truly love this community and really care about the kind of care that we're able to offer to our family and friends and our neighbors. And you know, in the short time that I've been with RCG, I've spent most of my time talking to those friends at Dignity Health and at Adventist and at the various physician groups and saying, how can we come together? How can we have a true collaboration to make sure that the services are being met? Because, again, who are we caring for? We're caring for our loved ones, our neighbors, our friends. And so it's important to all of us. And I'm just happy to say that in this community, there are so many giving people that are willing to do that, are willing to say, let's go to the table and let's figure this out together. So we're putting together, you know, sort of the group of willing that want to come to the table and say, you know, maybe I can help with this and maybe you can help with that and maybe together we can accomplish this. And that's the goal. You know, no one's going to be able to do it all themselves. It's going to take real collaboration, honest collaboration, a real interest in partnership to make sure that the needs are met. And I'm confident we're going to be able to do that.
Well, I absolutely hope we can. The some, you know, one of the One of the articles that I was reading in preparation for today about some of what happened with Dignity, and one of the comments or the questions was, you know, do I need to be worried about my donations to other nonprofits, of what happens to my donations? And I really, you know, I would hate to think that other nonprofits would suffer because people are starting to question whether or not, for instance, another hospice like Hospice Slo County that counts on donations, or other organizations are taking advantage of what's happening.
Yeah, and that's a legitimate concern.
Sure.
Donations are really about trust.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A good part of the French story was taking a virtually bankrupt hospital and going to the community and asking them to invest in us so that we could become the kind of hospital that this community expected. And it meant, you know, folks had to trust what our vision was and that we would come through with it and accomplish it. So absolutely, it is all about trust. And
yes,
it's about having a vision that people can support. Beyond that, it's really, can I trust that they'll do the right things with the dollars that I give them?
How does that work for you, Alan? Because now you're with a for-profit company. Mm-hmm. And before, you were asking people with a nonprofit company where you raised a heck of a lot of money with French, and you did some incredible things with the different fundraisers and with the foundation, and do you envision being able to work hand in glove with the organizations? Because that's really a unique thing around here.
Yeah, we do. In fact, I'm not prepared to go into details today, but we're arranging. I mentioned our co-founders, Arpad and his wife Adela Sue. They're, mm-hmm. they're very incredibly passionate people that believe deeply in giving back. He has an incredible life story about how he ended up here and how he's a self-made successful businessman. And he's very acutely aware of the struggles that others have because he himself experienced those things and is very determined to give back to the community. So he and his wife are very philanthropic by nature. We're working on a gift right now that's a substantial size gift to French Hospital. We're also talking about creating a not-for-profit within our own organization so that we're also able to funnel funds and raise funds that can also be supportive of those that are less fortunate than us. Because unfortunately, even though this is a well-off community, there are so many that are not as fortunate and are in dire need of what we can.
More than there are wealthy.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. And we'll come back to that. We're going to take a break. I'm going to go back over to you, Brad. And there you go.
And we'll be back to you in just a couple of moments here. Federal funding for public media has been eliminated by Congress. I'm sure you've heard of that. The cut, though, it's taking effect in October, very quickly coming. So right now we're in our fall pledge drive, and we're urging you to not wait to become a new member of KCBX, because you'll not only join thousands of other listeners who support the station, but you'll also help us exceed our financial goal of $150,000 during this fall pledge drive. And every dollar is needed to help keep Central Coast Public Radio strong here for another 50 years. We're serious about it, folks, and we do need your help. Our audience has been more than generous, but we're going to keep asking for you to donate now during our fall pledge drive at kcbx.org. Or if you want to call and talk to somebody about it, call us at 800-549-8855 and do your part. For the price of a cup of coffee or a gallon of gas, you can make a difference and keep public radio strong and keep these voices alive here on our local public radio. Central Coast Voices will continue in just a moment.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. Very few people win a MacArthur Genius Award. Cristina Jimenez did it because of her activism. Now she's written a book about transforming her fear of deportation into her activism and love of this country. That's this week on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, Jude Law, the star of such films as The Talented Mr. Ripley and Cold Mountain, and the HBO series The Young Pope. He'll talk about his latest role in the Netflix thriller Black Rabbit. He plays a restaurant owner caught in a web of crime, betrayal, and family ties. Join us.
China has halted purchases of U.S. soybeans and sorghum, troubling U.S. farmers.
Without the export 22 China, we may have been successful in killing that entire crop.
I'm Kimberly Adams, Harvest Economics, next time on Marketplace.
That's a look ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX. You can hear Fresh Air coming up at 3. That's right after Latino USA following this program at 2. Then it's Marketplace at 4 and All Things Considered at 4:30, leading to an evening of music that gets underway inside the Road Home with Marisa Waddell. Right now, let's join Chris Kington Barker and her guest on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. Welcome back. My guest is Alan Iftanuk, CEO for the Rose Care Group, or RCG, as we've been talking about how they plan to address gaps in senior services following the departure of Wilshire Community Health and Community Services. We invite you to share your questions or concerns about the changes in senior services with closure, and you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. And Alan, we were talking about, you know, the disparity in the groups of people in the community, the people that we have a lot of really people who are done well. They're well set in their retirement or in their lifestyles, and they're comfortable here, and they will be through the remainder of their life. And then there are people who are comfortable, and one little blip could put them over. Yeah. A major illness with extraordinary expenses to health care, having an illness that requires long, exhaustive care, something like an Alzheimer's, where there aren't services that they can get assistance and support for because Medicare won't pay for them, or they can't have somebody come in because they can't afford that kind of service. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that really don't have the resources. You know, they're really kind of pinching pennies and spending everything that they're bringing in on welfare or Medicare. Mm-hmm. How do we address some of those things? How do we in the community begin to have a collaboration to look at that?
You know, Chris, yeah, it's sad to say that all of that is true. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen it, right, through our own life experiences with family or friends or neighbors where, you know, maybe they've just have gone through their life savings or just don't have the kinds of resources that are required. Healthcare is very expensive, as we all know. So yeah, our heart goes out to those folks, and that's really what we're talking about, is how do we help those folks? You're right; those that have been fortunate enough to be, you know, in a very comfortable financial position, you know, we're not so worried about them. They have lots of options and opportunities. What we're really talking about is, you know, extending the safety net to those folks that are not as fortunate. So what I have found in my 20-plus years here in San Luis Obispo is those that have are incredibly, can be incredibly generous in this community. One of the things that we're planning to do at RCG is create a not-for-profit division within our own organization so that we can go out and talk to those folks that helped me and others over the years come up with incredible gifts to support rebuilding of a broken down hospital. And I know, and I've already talked to some of these folks, that their passion and compassion for helping others is very, very true. And we want to have the vehicles to be able to allow them to be able to support us with their finances, because it takes a community really to raise the family. And mm-hmm. So we're gonna go back out to the community and ask for the assistance that I know that they're very willing to give.
Yeah, and you know, I think the fact that I know that when I talk with Shannon, who's the executive director of Hospice Slow, one of the things that they have seen is a tremendous request from community for support for services in home for folks who don't have the resources. Mm-hmm. And I think the last time she and I talked, about 80% of the people that they have that they're providing services to are families that there's some form of dementia.
Yeah.
And that dementia is going to be ongoing, you know, not necessarily life limiting right now, but something that they need support for. And, you know, there's no other resources for them.
Yeah. You know, I think we have to think a little bit differently, a little bit outside the box. You know, there's always a desire in communities, including ours, to have something like a hospice house, which is a wonderful organization, a wonderful place that folks sort of in the last chapter of their life can go and be cared for and loved. And my experience is that it would not be horribly difficult to raise the funds to build that house.
But sustaining it.
There is virtually no reimbursement for it.
None.
So how do you sustain it? So the concept is still good. At RCG, what we think about is, you know, we have an awful lot of beds through our 15 facilities. And there's turnover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because people pass on. People go to live with relatives, they move, whatever. And at any given time, there's a certain percent of beds that are available. What we're beginning to do is talk to our partners, our healthcare partners, about, you know, how do we make those beds available for those patients in need of a hospice space?
So are you looking at doing some kind of charity care or having beds? Do you have discounts for, say, veterans? Or does the VA pay for residential for the assisted living or
it's all private pay.
It's all private pay.
Yeah. These facilities are all private pay.
Okay.
So what we're talking about is how do we collaborate with our partners?
Right.
You know, we provide a space, you provide some of the services. Whatever is reimbursed, the rest we just eat it's the good of the community. It's a less expensive way than building the optimum, which would be a hospice house, which,
right,
as we just said, while it's a wonderful concept, it from a business perspective just isn't sustainable.
No.
But the need is
there. Houses aren't. Yeah. They build them and then they close them.
And then they close them. Right.
They build them and they close them. Yes. What is it that you think is probably the most important next step for the community now?
In terms of
filling the gap?
You know, I think, again, building these collaborations, getting our partners in place and assigning, you know, responsibility for what we're all going to do to be able to contribute to the well-being of the senior community is really important. And we're well down that road, but we're still in discussions. There's an awful lot of interest. People are coming to the table. We're asking people to come to the table and share with us what their thoughts, their ideas, what their vision might be, and what they can contribute. And there's no shortage of folks that are raising their hands saying, you know, Alan, I want to be at that table with you. So we're in the process. It isn't going to happen overnight. But we're all concerned. We're all committed to this. And each day we hope that we can start to make more and more of a difference.
Is there anything left of what was Wilshire that you can rebuild?
I'm not that familiar
with
ultimately. I mean, again, I was sort of out of it for the last couple of years. And,
that's right. You were bouncing around the world.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was traveling. So I'm not really sure what was left. I know that, again, there were some awfully good, compassionate, wonderful caregivers there,
right,
some wonderful people, and they provided some incredibly valuable services to our community. And the sadness of all this is that those services are no longer, for the most part, available. But I know other organizations like Dignity and others are trying to pick up the ball and the pieces of some of those.
Well, and they are.
And mm-hmm. also trying to, you know, continue those services to the folks. So, again, what a wonderful community that we live in where there's such a desire for everybody to sort of chip in and say,
now,
let's
French
do it.
And Marion have community services of sorts, too, do they not?
Correct, yes.
And do they have continuum of care services?
So so Dignity has a home care division
right.
and a hospice division.
Right.
So there is there is a continuum of services to an extent. Ours broadens that a little bit further. But we know that the need is as large as those organizations are, and Dignity is a pretty large organization, it can't meet all of the existing mm-hmm. needs. So there's plenty of work to be done. We don't have to be competitive with one another.
Right.
There's plenty of work for us to do. Let's just figure out how we do it in the best possible way collaboratively.
We talked about the lack of a continuum of care, and there's really difficulty in the handoff
exactly.
of people from one service to another. And that gets kind of built into the system. It's a hard thing to address. But it seems as though if you're able to build a continuum of care, that that's something that could be built into another organization as well, that in the community it would be a benefit, for instance, with Dignity, since they have physicians, they've got home health, they've got hospice, they've got community outreach and services. Is there discussion with them about how you build those things together?
Yes.
Okay.
So I've met with Sue Anderson and her team. Of course, I know them all intimately.
Of course you do.
And again, we come from the same place. We want to do the right thing. Yeah, we've talked about what can we do to help each other to make sure that there is no gap.
Right.
We're talking about how do we do that successfully, right, and seamlessly, because that handoff, as you said, is really the most difficult part of what we're talking about in the continuum. That's true inside the hospital.
Right.
When a person goes from the ER to telemetry to the OR to the ICU, it's different people doing different things, and communication is so, so important. Well, the hospitals have done a really, really good job, and French is a prime example,
right.
looking at our safety scores, of being really, really good at those handoffs. But then when we start taking divisions, especially with large companies, and they're outside the organization, different reporting relationships, those handoffs become more and more confusing. And then sometimes if you have to go to an outside agency that is not even part of that organization, then it's a whole different ballgame. So our idea of the continuum is it's done from
inclusive.
Independent living through hospice, one organization.
Yeah, kind of like a Kaiser model, right?
Yeah, yes.
Only better.
Only
because Kaiser
yes,
kind
yes.
of has gotten a little...
Yeah, the model, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you... what is it that you would like to see happen... around the whole idea of access of expanding this service in the community? Do you see building more homes? Do you see just working with the ones that you've got now in the community and expanding the services through those?
I see all of those things.
Okay.
So you know, we are always looking at potential properties that we can
How do you pick
acquire.
The sites?
You know, you look at a facility, a building, and say, you know, can this be, you know, what was its original intent? What would it cost to remodel it and, you know, reframe it the way that we need it? So, you know, there's a cost factor. There's a community factor depending where the building is. What do the permits allow you to do or not allow you to
were
do?
Were these pre-existing buildings for the most
some
part?
Were, and
okay.
some were brand new.
Okay.
Right? So all of that comes into play. But again, you know, I think it's also looking at things a little bit differently. You know, more and more care is given outside the four walls of the hospital. And I think that that's going to continue to happen because it's very costly to be in the hospital, as we all know. And there are cheaper ways to be able to provide certain levels of care. So I think, you know, home care is growing in importance. Medicare is, you know, paying more and more attention and, you know, looking at fees that are reimbursable for Medicare because it's a cheaper way to provide care than in the hospital. Transitional care is very important. So once a person is discharged from the hospital, the first 30 days after discharge are considered to be the most critical. And it too often, within that 30-day framework, the patient has to come back to the hospital. And that's a very expensive and almost oftentimes needless kind of thing to happen. So can we help with transition care? There's a new growing movement around the country. It's called the HOMIST program, where physicians or supervised caregivers on a virtual basis, on Skype or whatever, can talk to patients and talk to them about their day-to-day issues so that they don't have to come into an office, right? So did you do your blood pressure and what's your blood pressure today? And more technology, Apple right. and others are coming with that. So there's a lot of things that can be done outside the four walls of the hospital to keep the cost of care down and provide care to folks when access to care, to physical care, is getting harder and harder to come by. That's where I want us to go.
Yeah, and how is technology, how do you see technology playing into that? Because there's so much technology that can be linked into that. Do you see, is there technology available that really enhances that?
You know, I think Apple and Google and others are doing some really incredible things at Dignity. I know that we worked with Apple for quite a while on some things and Google with some things. AI is bringing on a whole new set of opportunities. I'm very excited about what AI can do in healthcare.
Yeah.
And I think that there are an awful lot of opportunities to improve care, to lower the cost of care, to manage care a lot more efficiently through the use of those technologies and emerging capabilities.
Absolutely.
It's sad. Pretty exciting.
It is. It's absolutely exciting. There's no question about it. I'm talking with Alan Iftinick, the CEO for Rose Care Group, and we're talking about their organization and some of the ways that they're looking at being able to fill gaps in services for Wilshire Services and also existing gaps that just exist in our community. I want to remind you that our fall pledge drive is underway, and we're asking you to help us toward our goal of $150,000. Our listener support provides the majority of the funds here at KCBX that are needed to operate. Even more so now that the federal funding for public media has been eliminated, which means we won't receive federal dollars we were counting on in October and beyond. You can renew your support or become a new member by visiting KCBX online, kcbx.org online, or call us at 800-549-8855. And again, I'm talking with Alan Iftinick, CEO for the Rose Care Group. And Alan, we have just about a few minutes to wrap up. I want to put it back to you for any final comments or specific points that you want to make that you came here today for.
Well, I think there's a, you know, again, we're so fortunate and blessed in this community. There are so many people that truly are compassionate and want to give and are truly understanding of what the needs of others are. And RCG really is an organization that wants to be at the forefront of pulling all of those well-intended folks together to say, what can we do to make a positive difference with the seniors in our community? We are fully 100% committed to it. We invite comments. We invite suggestions. We look forward to being your healthcare partner in the future.
And how would, if someone has an idea, if someone has a desire to get in contact, it's an organization that says, I want to learn more, I have some ideas to work with you, how would they get in touch?
I think through our
website.
Through
your website.
Yeah. Yes.
And talk a little bit for, you know, we've got a few more minutes. Talk a little bit about who, you know, how people will be able to decide to come and visit the home, or if they're interested in learning more about your residences.
Well, again, there's websites. There's the umbrella website, but there's also it will point you to a particular location if you're interested in that location. And we're continuing to develop our web pages and the information that we provide about Avum Home Care and Avum Hospice, which is our organizations that provide those services, as well as Wellbridge, which is our concierge medical service. So all of those things can be found on the web. And there'll be pointers that will get you from one place to the other, depending on where your interest lies.
Okay. And for folks that are in the community that now are looking to get into home health, that need to hire a home health or hire a hospice, is that something that they can contact you about, or they should go to Wilshire or to Central Coast Hospice right now for that?
You know, I think that there are some options in the community. You know, Dignity Health has a good program, you know, so that there's a program that they might want to look at.
Oh, again, I said Wilshire, I meant Dignity.
Yeah. So, there are some. And again, as we, you know, continue to develop our capabilities, more and more we'll be out into the public and let folks know what's available through us specifically.
Okay. And you think that you'll have more in the not too distant future,
that is my goal. Yes,
and you'll let those be known.
We will. We'll keep you informed.
Okay, and I want to thank my guest for today, Alan Iftinick, CEO for the Rose Care Group. More about CRCG. You can visit their website at rosecaregroup.com. Next week, Lada Morty and her guests from the City of Guadalupe Parks and Recreation will be discussing upcoming events for Guadalupe. Our fall pledge drive is now underway, and you can help us toward the goal of $150,000. Your support for KCBX is vital and helps pay for this program and the other shows that you enjoy every day. Become a new member or renew your support at kcbx.org. I'm Chris King Barker, and thank you for being a KCBX listener, supporter, and for listening to Central Coast Voices today.